This is My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange, where we explore midlife reinventions and late life thriving. I'm Vanessa Finney. My guest today is an example of how essential parts of ourselves can recede for a while and then reemerge with a new power. Natasha Neis spent her young adulthood singing in bands, then happily left it behind for motherhood. But once her kids were grown, she reconnected to singing and spent several years performing in a popular Led Zeppelin tribute band, Living Loving Led. In April, she published a memoir about those experiences. I asked Natasha to trace her music career from the beginning to the present day and what she learned along the way.
Well, I started when I was probably like a teenager in New York City. I sang for about 17 years straight. I was never without a band, and I loved it. I felt like it was absolutely who I was, and I'm right.
But then you took a break.
I did. I had two sons, and they were 2 years apart, and the lifestyle of practicing late at night and going out late at night and all that, and I just needed to stay home with my boys, and I wanted to, and so that's what I did for about 20 years. And when they were getting ready to go into third and fifth grade, I moved to Oregon and was in Oregon for 20 years and then went to LA for 2 years, and now I'm back.
And this is kind of where I want to pick it up, because first of all, as you were raising these fine young men that they've turned out to be.
Indeed.
Obviously, your heart was in that. But how were you feeling about music then? Because you knew that was essentially who you are. Of course, now you have this new identity as mother. That's also very much who you are. What was the process like leaving temporarily that part of yourself behind? And how did you rediscover it?
It felt very natural to leave it behind. I was so in love with my boys that I only wanted to spend time with them. And I did make up songs for them. We have songs about making quesadillas and shopping, and, you know, in the grocery store and all kinds of songs that we still sing today sometimes. But yeah, you know, they grow up and they fly the nest. And then we're left to remember who we are at the core. And through divine orchestration, I believe, I rediscovered singing. I never thought that I would sing again, really, not with a band. I thought, boy, I had blown that out in my 20s and 30s. I had had a blast and that was it. But it did come back into my life really serendipitously just through hearing a rock band practicing in a barn nearby. Yeah, they really invited me in, and I began to consider the possibility of singing again. And I had also started a real serious meditation practice, and I needed to make some big changes in my life. I was in a very unhealthy relationship. And between the meditation and then the empowerment that came through rediscovering singing, I was able to leave that relationship and start a whole new life and start singing. And yeah, it's just been pretty full on since then.
In the book, you describe music as a catalyst for healing and self-discovery. Was there a specific moment or a specific performance where you realized it's gone beyond self-expression? This is actually changing you. And in midlife, you were in your 50s at this point, right? When you rediscovered music.
Mm-hmm. I think it was the time that we're talking about, really, when I first started singing again. And I thought, I want to sing that song Barracuda, because I've always loved Heart. I grew up with Heart. And I was like, that's bound to be about the hardest song to sing. If I can really get my voice back up to being able to sing that, I can sing anything. So that's what I did. I just sang Barracuda in my little cabin every day for hours. And it was rough at first, but then I started really hitting the notes and holding them and feeling it. And then it got to be fun. And just the physical ability to move that much energy alone was really healing and empowering. But also then just the way that that was opening possibility for me. And I was a little surprised. You know, I was like, okay.
At your ability or the reaction to your ability?
My ability.
Thank you. art is such a vulnerable space. We can have such self-doubt around it. And you were fortunate enough to have such good support right when you started getting back into music. What was that like, and how empowering was that for you?
To have the positive feedback was really reassuring because, you know, art is such a subjective experience. And to have feedback coming from the outside talking about, oh, yeah, that was really good. That was good. And I loved how happy you were when you're doing that, you know, and I could just really feel your presence. I was like, wow, I would love to keep doing this. I want to do another song. And so I did. The next song I chose was a Zeppelin song, Immigrant Song. And then pretty soon someone asked me to join their band. And so I started to sing. It was a variety cover band, you know,
saucy.
All different kinds of stuff from Taylor Swift to Led Zeppelin. And yeah, that was really fun. And I love them. We're still really good friends, but I did get pretty clear. I just want to sing Led Zeppelin.
That was sort of your, I'll call it a midlife pivot, the beginning of this whole new chapter. Once you started your tribute band, Living Loving Led, that was a 6-year journey. And I would love to have you tell us about some of the challenges you faced with so many different personnel. There's so many different moving pieces and personalities and opinions and power dynamics. What are some challenges you face as a band, and how did you meet them? How did you get the strength to learn how to negotiate all that?
Well, there were many, many challenges professionally and personally. I would say the biggest challenge for me was just disrespect. Some of the guys were just really disrespectful. In my previous life with bands, we were bonded. We were young. We hung out. We were best friends. We were like family. You know, it wasn't just a band. It was a bond. And so that was a shocking reality for me, that that's not how it was necessarily going to be, even though that's what I loved most about being in a band.
What was the source of that disrespect?
I think mostly it was that I was a woman amidst a bunch of men. I really didn't fit in. And I did not really stand up for myself the way that I could have. I was giving my heart away right off the bat because I thought that's what we were doing. You know, it was collaboration, and that comes from the heart in my world. And, you know, I respect people more and more because of that. But yeah, I definitely gave my power away to keep the peace and for them to like me and to avoid conflict and these kinds of things that really illuminated the wounding that I was navigating, that I finally decided to write a book about, because I really did have to strengthen myself, get really clear, and build some new muscles around these kinds of things, mostly self-respect.
How would you describe the leadership style that you developed?
Well, I really wanted to lead through inspiration. I really was hoping that we could all inspire each other, and that, you know, create the chemistry within the band that way. I learned that maybe the feminine way of leadership isn't really received or understood necessarily by men for the most part. And what I learned is that I have to really just kind of take my heart out of it in the beginning and require respect first and then friendship. And so I had to approach it more professionally by setting the expectations up front. I didn't really like having to set myself aside and say, you know, I'm the leader because I'm booking all the shows and doing all the promotions, so I get the last word on things. You know, I didn't really like setting myself apart like that, but it ended up that was what I had to do. And there was, you know, distance between us all because of that. And a lot of the guys didn't like it. And it was a very unnatural way for me to lead.
For our listeners, what's one hard-won lesson that you learned through those types of conflicts that you would want to offer as insight to somebody? Would it be that just set a professional tone first and then see how safe it is to bring the heart out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be it.
You took some bruising first before you realized.
Indeed.
Well, I would love to get more into the music. So you had this first reinvention where you got back into singing, and then you went deeper with it, which caused another transformation. And that is that you just really deeply studied the music of Led Zeppelin, the whole work. So how did that affect you?
Golly, Led Zeppelin is a whole universe in itself, which I had not discovered. I didn't really grow up with Led Zeppelin, honestly. I discovered that, later. And the feeling of the whole mythos of it, it was, you know, very nature-based, very spiritual, really, very primal as well. It covers the full spectrum of human experience. And to be able to channel my emotions through, you know, all the different songs that have all these very different kinds of emotions, you know, longing, yearning, lust, awe, anger, feeling great, partying, being worry-free, or being dazed and confused, or it's truly the full spectrum. And also multi-genre. And so to be able to really throw myself into those songs. And then, you know, we even went archetypal with a lot of it, with wardrobe and story arc and all kinds of things. It was so cathartic. Not only the heavy songs are cathartic, but the beautiful songs are cathartic.
Just the soft voice and guitar really, really transports you. You did get theatrical and bring sort of a pageantry to it, which they have in the music. I mean, Robert Plant's voice is so primal at one end and then just soft like a glove at the other. Mm-hmm. We'll put a picture up on the website, but can you describe just some of your more theatrical setting elements that you started to use eventually on stage?
We had a lot of fun with the Lord of the Rings, and starting with like the warrior and the maiden and these kinds of things, and then moving into more of like the king and the queen and the wizard, and speaking kind of about war and transcendence and the Stairway to Heaven. There was one show that we went into Galadriel. Like, I had a full Galadriel outfit, and my guitarist was Legolas, and the bass was Legolas. The guitarist was Ryder, and
love it with your long hair and the mm-hmm. flowing gown.
Oh yeah, and it was a translucent white gown with a huge hood, and I asked the light man to shine lights from behind, so it was all silhouetted, which was really, really nice. You know, you could really kind of go there. And that's what I really wanted people to do, whether we were in extravagant wardrobe or not, is just to really go into the feelings and the messages of the songs. Just kind of have a little time at a time.
Let's have you read a bit of your book.
All right. Well, I'll read The Discovery of Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
As the Saucy Band's set list grew, I couldn't resist suggesting more Led Zeppelin. Every time I stepped up to sing one of their songs, it felt like stepping further into my own power, vocally, physically, and energetically. Sometimes my voice would surprise me, and the resonance of the higher notes would ignite something wild and unstoppable within me. Audiences began requesting more Zeppelin, echoing the recognition I was already feeling. Soon I found myself diving deep into their catalog, listening obsessively, truly discovering Led Zeppelin for the first time. That's when I began to clearly see Robert Plant, not just as an uninhibited, sexy frontman, but as a dreamer, a mystic, a lover of nature. His voice carried the winds of mythology and reverence for the divine. His lyrics spoke of longing, passion, transcendence, and the sacred within the earthly. I felt profoundly aligned with the way he so wildly and tenderly gave his soul to the world. Led Zeppelin, I realized, was never just about rock and roll. Their music was beckoning the awakening of the human spirit. The emotional force and inspirational depth in their songs called to me like a lighthouse through the fog. And so the truth emerged. I didn't want to sing anything else. Singing their songs felt like a personal reclamation. And in that reclamation, a dream was born, the vision of a Led Zeppelin tribute band, not just to cover their songs, but to embody their mythos.
I love that the truth emerged.
Yep.
And you had to learn that about yourself as well. Like, okay, I'm going here. This is where I'm going. I'm curious if you have any thoughts about the fact that in your 50s, new truths are still emerging about what's good for you, what you're gravitating toward. Does it make you think, well, what else is to come? You know, life keeps delivering unexpected things.
Absolutely. I mean, this book is a perfect example. I had no idea that was coming. Yeah, just following our heart. And I think that things continue to emerge until the day that we die.
Yeah. What would you like readers to take away from this memoir?
I would say, if you're having struggles, just keep peeling back the onion, asking the why and the what, because really the more clear that we are, the better we can navigate ourselves and all our relationships, which are just really the most important thing in life.
You've been listening to My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. My guest was Natasha Neese, singer and author of the new memoir, Rise Up and Rock, A Front Woman's Journey. The book release party is being hosted by White Rabbit in Ashland on May 23rd from 7 to 10 p.m.